All right, so the L.A. City Council last week joined San Francisco, a couple of other cities in California, banning the possession of ammunition magazines that hold more than 10 rounds. And on Tuesday, yesterday, they unanimously backed new requirements that gun owners lock up or disable handguns when in the home. And, of course, gun owners would say, well, that kind of defeats the purpose of having a gun in the home if somebody breaks into your house, if you have to be fumbling around to try to get locks off of it or get it out of a gun safe or something like that, you're ceding time and advantage to an interloper. To talk to us about this, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show President of the Crime Prevention Research Center, John Lott. How are you, John?
Doing great. Great to talk to you again.
So it's not a surprise that the L.A. City Council is doing this. This is like New York City. This is an issue that is a perpetual issue in L.A., and it's banning weapons or restricting access to weapons is something that the L.A. City Council and various mayors have been doing for really decades.
Right. Well, I mean, there are obviously bad things that happen with guns in terms of accidents and other things. My guess is those numbers are much smaller than most people might think. You look nationwide, I mean, they're talking about accidental gun deaths involving kids. For kids under 15, for the latest year we have it for the Centers for Disease Control, there were 63 accidental gun deaths. And about two-thirds of those were actually shots fired by adult males, usually with some type of criminal record or having other problems such as alcoholism. They're not, even in those cases, they're not your normal household. But the point that you brought up, I think, is exactly right, and that is there are trade-offs in these laws. Everybody wants to prevent, you know, one accidental death from a child is one too many. But the problem is that if you make it so that people can't defend themselves, you do two things. One is you encourage criminals to go and attack people in their home, and they're more successful in doing the attack. And research that's looked at these types of gun lock laws finds that on net, you actually see an increase. I mean, published, peer-reviewed academic research finds that when you measure the different costs and benefits together, these types of gun lock laws actually cause more harm, more deaths than you would have otherwise. I just give you a simple comparison across country. There's something called hot burglary rates, and those are burglaries that occur while the residents are in the dwelling. We have it for all sorts of countries around the world, but let's just take the United Kingdom and the United States. The United Kingdom has a burglary rate that's about twice the burglary rate that we have here in the United States. But 60% of the time, the criminals break into people's homes. They break in while the residents are in the house. In the United States, it's about 13%. And there's surveys that are done of burglars who have been caught and convicted to ask, how long did you spend casing a house? And why did you decide to go in? And what they find is that American burglars spend about twice as long trying to decide whether to break into a home encasing it than their British counterparts. And the reason why they do it is because they say they're worried about getting shot. In Britain, they're not worried about getting shot, so they don't try to worry whether people are in the home there or not. And you have a lot of injuries in Britain that occur and deaths from criminals breaking into homes in there. So they are more likely to break in, and they're more likely to break in when people are at home because they have less to worry about.
We're talking with John Lott, president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. The website is crimeresearch.org. Would this new L.A. law apply to police officers who have a service revolver at home?
Well, the police officers are objecting to this rule. I mean, they themselves have pointed out the exact concern that you raised in terms of it making it so that individuals can't go and defend themselves. There's some murkiness in the law. The police officers have asked for clarifications, and they haven't been able to get any yet, at least as recently as this morning's LA Times article on the topic. So, but it appears that it applies to everybody right now.
John, the country reacts, of course, to these horrific shootings, whether it's jihadist wannabes inspired by ISIS or thrown over to ISIS attacking military recruiting offices or Fort Hood, killing 13, or it's someone shooting up a movie theater or a church in Charleston, South Carolina. This is what we're reacting to, and rightly so. From your perspective, as somebody who's looked at every kind of conceivable kind of law, is there what kind of law do we need to protect ourselves better? I know we're never going to make it perfect, but what can we do, or what should we do, to protect ourselves against those kinds of incidents?
Well, I think there's one common feature that rarely gets talked about across these cases, and that is, if you look since at least 1950, with just two exceptions, every single one of the mass public shootings, including all the ones that you just listed there, occurred in places where guns for general citizens were banned. And the thing is, in the cases that you just mentioned, many times it's explicit that these killers picked the place that they did because there wasn't anybody to stop them. People weren't able to protect themselves. So the Charleston kid, his first target, he considered, was Charleston College. But he realized that there was too much security there, so he didn't go and do that. You look at the Batman movie theater shooter. It just came out when his diary was released 2 months ago that his first choice, Denver Airport. But he said, look, there's too much security there. They'll stop me before I'm able to go and kill enough people. And the movie theater that he picked was the only one of the seven movie theaters within a 20-minute drive of his apartment that were showing the premiere of the Batman movie that had posted signs banning permanent concealed handguns. He didn't go to the movie theater that was closest to his home. He didn't go to the one that advertised itself prominently as having the largest auditoriums in the state of Colorado, which you would think would be attractive for somebody who wanted to kill as many people as possible. And you look at other cases, the Santa Barbara killer. Last year, if you read his manifesto, he went in, you know, after you get by him complaining about women not liking him, he goes through excruciating detail about how he chose the places he wanted to attack. And what he talks about there is he turns down other places because he's worried that there might be too many police there that would stop him before he was able to go and kill enough of his desired target. Or even the attack in Canada last year, the mass public shooting there. The killer there had comics up on his Facebook page making fun of these so-called gun-free zones. He has one case where a victim is pleading with a mass killer saying that, look, guns are banned. You're not allowed to have a gun here, so you can't shoot me. While the killer, as he's pointing his gun at the person presumably ready to shoot him also.
All right. John, we're gonna have to leave it there this morning. We thank you for coming on with us. CrimeResearch.org is the website. John Lott, President, Crime Prevention Research Center. Let's go check traffic. Here's Bill Thomas.